I'm Jeremy Greer.
I'm Chris Mosier.
And this is Non-Human Biologics, the creepy but necessary podcast that haunts something. I don't know, man. This episode was a real bummer
for me. Haunted cops something.
Yeah, yeah. This episode was a real bummer. Before we get into big stuff, or into episode stuff, I want to have a... I want to mention to people that might be struggling. I didn't actually know this until I looked up today that there's a 988 lifeline network that you can call or text if you're having thoughts of like self-harm or suicide. I don't know if I've told you this, Chris, but I lost someone to suicide this week. It makes you think like all of those thoughts of like, could I have done something? Should I have been better? Should I have reached out? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I can't blame yourself for somebody else's actions. But I just wanted to mention it because it hit me so close this week. Like, if you're having those thoughts, like, it's real easy for me to get on a microphone and say, like, reach out to somebody. And I know that's really, really difficult for people to do. But, like, if you want to DM us, that's fine. But, like, 988, apparently you can call, you can go chat online, you can text, and they will communicate with you. So reach out to somebody before considering the alternative.
Please.
Not to bring the entire podcast down at one time, but I did want to mention that. So
I got a BBL joke in the chamber, so don't
worry.
Oh,
good. Excellent. Okay. I think I'm going to skip Patreon stuff, so we'll go right into what's been happening on the X-Files, Chris. How are you, Chris? What's been happening on the X-Files?
I'm fine, I guess. Last time on the X-Files, we were, unfortunately, reintroduced to Eugene Victor Toombs. Despite being some kind of unfit lizard man freak, he is let out of prison. I guess it's not a crime to be a freaky little guy. But it is a crime to murder people for their BBLs and hibernate in a papier-mâché cocoon, and Mulder can't let this stand. He becomes obsessed with catching Toombs, once again putting his career on the line, and as he and Scully are both put under the watchful eye of FBI Assistant Director Walter Skinner. But in the end, Scully and Mulder are able to catch Toombs and feed him to an escalator.
Perfect. Today we're covering X-Files Season 1, Episode 22, Born Again. After a detective and his former partner die in inexplicable circumstances, the accidents are linked to a little girl who witnessed both deaths. This aired on April 29th, 1994, directed by Gerald Friedman, written by Alex Gonza, Howard Gordon. And like I mentioned at the very top of the show, this episode was kind of a drag for me. The reincarnation thing, I don't think really gets sold until close to the end. Because they made this little girl, they leaned into like the creepy staring little girl kind of gimmick so hard that like she has no personality or anything. So like anytime she's in the room, she wasn't scary to me. She was just like, oh, now you're just looking at somebody. Like
she was just kind of like baked.
It seemed like she was just fucking stoned all the time.
She was just feeling a little toasty, you know what I mean?
And then it's like we get the stereotypical conversations we've had with Mulder and Scully for a while, which I hope in season two or towards the end of season one we can evolve that conversation a little bit between like, what is it going to take for you to believe? I can't believe this. There's a bunch of that, and I don't know, man. Like, I'm just kind of getting a little bit bored of that argument. Hopefully, again, like I said, that evolves a little bit. How did you feel about this episode overall before we...
I thought it was just fine. Well, you know, just kind of running through the motions. If anything, it gave us a couple opportunities for Scully to call Mulder out, even though, he was 100% right, which is sometimes a little frustrating. And I know Mulder is kind of our main character, and Scully is, like, the second main character. But I just feel like when he just comes up with the most random shit possible, and she's like, Mulder, no, it doesn't have to be ghosts.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be. We got a photo of this man on the wall right here. Like, that's where she got that image of. And of course, she has to be wrong every time. That's what sticks out the most to me from this episode. But
let's get into it.
Let's just get into it, because to start it off, we get Police Detective Sharon Lazard. She's getting off of work. She just worked the night shift. She steps outside, and she just had a little conversation with Sergeant such and such. I don't know. I got his name later.
Detective Barbala.
Detective Barbala. Yeah. So she goes outside. She just had a conversation with him. And she sees this little girl still sitting in the alleyway outside. And the girl says she's lost. So the detective brings her back inside and wants her to talk to Detective Barbala, do a little interview with her, find out her parents' name and all that. And that's exactly what we see. They're sitting alone in a room together. Barbala starts asking the girl this question. Hey, what's your name? Oh, her name's Michelle. What's your last name? Where are your parents? Where do you live? All this stuff. And the whole time she's just staring off into space, not really engaging. She's giving short answers. And next thing we know, we see the detective get thrown out of the window.
Just thrown through the window. And the little girl
is just sitting there calmly watching.
Just sitting there chilling out.
She's pretty toasted.
We get our intro and then we come back where the press is on the scene. And so is Mulder and Scully. Lazard has called them in because her brother worked on the Toombs case, and it kind of identified Mulder and Scully as like being a little bit more open-minded.
Now, that's a detail I do like.
I do like that as well. Like,
it's like, okay, he has a reputation that isn't just like he's a freaky guy. He's actually, so they solve cases, and they kind of take on these strange things. And I like that it was just a direct reference to something else. Of course, it's Eugene Toombs, which is like the only one that anybody knows
of
about.
Course.
He got two episodes already.
He got two episodes in season
still,
one. So.
Yeah, it's a nice callback.
Sharon tells them that Michelle, who again is the little girl, said that there was another man in the room, but she was, you know, kind of watching the door, and like nobody came in or out, so she doesn't believe it. Michelle was picked up by her mother an hour before this, and so they decide to go visit her and try to get like a face. An approximation, like a little face scan. So they've got
a composite sketch, except they're using like a sweet portable computer.
Love this, especially when Mulder leans over and whispers in the technician's ear, and you can't see what he's saying. And instead of like a normal mustache, it comes out with like the evil villain twisted up waxed mustache, and of course it causes this Michelle girl to laugh. Like, he's really just like
the only sign of emotion we get the whole time,
the entire time. Yeah. And there's a weird moment of electrical interference when this happens, and then the mustache goes normal, and this is what she says the man looked like. Meanwhile, Scully's interviewing the mom. The mom has been kind of going through the wars, it sounds like. Dad left. Michelle has gone through four nannies. When she got home today, Michelle was missing, and the nanny was locked in the wine cellar. So probably going to lose this one too. And she says that, you know, Michelle is the problem. She's not like normal girls. She says that she can hear and see things that I can't see. They go outside and like there's a pool that's been covered up, and she goes, Michelle, you know, was going to try to learn how to swim, but she started screaming every time she got close to the water. So like something weird is up with this child, obviously. And if you're bored with me describing this, listener, let me tell you, watching the episode does not help very dramatically.
No, not a lot. It doesn't help a lot. Mulder shows this composite image that they've created to Michelle's mom, and she's like, I don't recognize this fella either. And somebody mentioned at some point that Michelle's only friend is Sheila. We learned that Sheila is actually her psychologist or psychiatrist. I don't know the difference, I'll be honest with you.
One can prescribe medicine. I don't remember which. I think it's psychiatrist. Yeah.
So that must be what they is, because they got her gone off that loud.
They do have her fucked up. Yeah.
Listen, I'm very liberal when it comes to the usage of substances. Do whatever you want. I don't give a shit. I don't think we should be given that loud to this little girl.
You don't think we should be giving 8-year-olds Thorazine pills? Like, you don't think that's a good thing for an 8-year-old to experience?
I just don't know if we necessarily want to have these kids gone out that loud. But what do I know? I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
You know?
Or
I'm not a psychiatrist.
Or a teacher or a parent. Like, you have no
fucking...
I'm just like a guy. Yeah, yeah. You're like the dude that shows up at the school board meeting, like, complaining about trans people when you're like, would you have any kids at the school? You're like, no, I'm just really mad.
No.
I'm just really angry about all the trans kids. And like, there's one trans kid at the school, my man. What is your problem? Like, what are you doing? Chris, why are you showing up to these meetings? You don't have any kids at the school.
I got a chip on my shoulder, man. So she, because she is, as noted, gone off that loud, Michelle is watching them from up in the window. And I thought it was going to be creepier. I thought it was just going to kind of be in the background looking through the window. But no, she throws an origami hawk at them.
Nice.
And I'm sorry that's origami hawk. That's two cool words.
Uh-huh.
To me, to say that out loud.
Uh-huh.
So Mulder's just impressed. He's like, "Well, that was fucking sick as fuck."
You got it right here. Like you threw the airplane. You threw the hawk right to me. This worked really well.
Hold on. This girl's locked in. What are you guys complaining about?
Where did she learn how to do that? I have no idea. Like it says, the mom. Like that, no clue.
Not the internet. Not YouTube.
Not YouTube, because YouTube did not exist.
Baby.
Yeah. Mulder and Scully split up. Mulder's going to go talk to the behavioral therapist, and while Scully goes to do the autopsy on the cop. And Mulder warns her to watch out for lesions, for like electric burns and lesions, because he thinks that like that's usually associated with some sort of psychokinesis. Scully is just like, I mean, like, really?
Are you saying Michelle possesses the ability to psychically project her own will? And Mulder goes, well, how else could it have happened? I don't know, Mulder.
A bunch of different ways. I don't know. Like, zombies weren't there. Who knows?
And unfortunately, he's right.
So Mulder goes to Sheila, the doctor, who explains like some of the treatment that she's been going through. Michelle has an extreme rage, which they've been able to control via Thorazine by just knocking the fucking chick out of her gourd. For a while, she was giving Michelle these dolls to play with, and as she would leave the room, she would mutilate the dolls in exactly the same way. She would take off the left arm, and she would like black out the right eye. But every single one of them is exactly the same.
And she thought that this must have been a sign of abuse, if something going on at home. Mm-hmm. She's for whatever reason, she's vetted the parents, and she does not suspect them of any abuse, and she thinks that this is coming from something else. Mulder asks if she's done any hypnosis or anything like that, but she says, no, you know, that's not really the thing we want to do. We've just been using medication to treat this little girl. And Mulder brings up the psychic ability thing, and the doctor is immediately like, get the fuck out. Shut the fuck up.
I love this exchange so much because he brings up, like, have you seen anything unusual? And then starts saying, like, psychokinesis or blah, blah, blah.
And she's like, nope.
And she's like, you've got to be kidding. And the camera goes back to Mulder, and he's just like, just deadpan staring at her, like, absolutely not. I'm in the FBI. Like, I'm asking you questions.
I'm very serious.
Absolutely fucking great. Just absolutely. And then we go right from this to Scully doing the autopsy, where she absolutely finds lesions on the cop's body. Like, a giant fucking, can't possibly miss it, electrical burn on this dude's stomach that is not, what did she say? It's not cooperative with what the cause of death or whatever.
Because they ruled it as a suicide. They said this dude jumped out the window, but she's like, well, this man has been electrocuted, like he was, you know, ran into fucking Pikachu. Something's happened to this man. This is a big deal.
This is where Sharon turns back up, pulls Scully out of the autopsy, which seems to annoy Scully a lot, and it would annoy me too. Like, I don't like it when, like, I've got soapy hands when I'm washing the dishes and I have to, like, answer my phone. So I can only imagine if you've got, like, that's autopsy gross all over your hands, and someone's like, hey, can you come over here?
She gets interrupted. Hey, can you come sign this? No, I can't. No. I have brain matter on my hand.
I'm literally fucking ankle, like, fucking wrist deep in brain.
I'm covered in another man's burn scars.
Yeah. I've been doing BBL examinations all morning. I can't sign anything right now. I need to wash.
She's got a liver in her hand. I just want to go back. I'm annoyed. I was trying to think of some sort of a creature or anything that would electrocute you, and all my brain could come up with was fucking Pikachu.
Pikachu? What about an eel? Don't they have electric
anything,
eels?
Anything! Like any real creature or real object, like an open, like sticking a fork in a socket, anything. My brain went to Pikachu.
Can you imagine fucking Mulder looking at Scully in all seriousness and saying, Scully, the signs of these wounds.
It's a Pikachu.
Could it be Pikachu?
Scully, there's signs of an electric rat in here.
Scully having to go like, what is a Pikachu? What are you talking about
with your mouth?
I feel like Gillian Anderson would be like, what is a Pikachu right now? I don't know if you've seen, like, somebody asked her if she had any interest in the X-Files reboot. And she was like, you know, I get asked this all the time, and the answer is always no. She goes, but I really respect Ryan Coogler and his work. So, like, maybe. And of course, like, I guess blogs took off with it. And then the next day, like, had to issue a statement saying, I am 100% not interested in the X-Files reboot. Just like, absolutely, like, shut it completely down. And
she was like, I was just trying to, like, be nice and, like, show a little respect to this creator. Not confirming. Oh, God.
So Sharon shows up. She's got a picture. She's found a match for the face. The match is Officer Charlie Morris, who, surprise, has been dead for the last 9 years. It's a ghost, I wish.
A pretty, like, standard-looking man with a mustache.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, this is the only person Michelle could have seen.
These two pictures look nothing alike
to me. You guys are in a New York police precinct, and you think that there's only one normal-looking man with a buzz cut and a mustache?
Since you mentioned New York, we should also mention Sharon's like weird New York via Canada.
I don't know if it's
accent.
Real or not, but it's fucking crazy.
It is. It is all over the place, and it's like sometimes it's there and sometimes
hey,
it's
Mulder,
not.
Hey, what are you
Mulder,
doing?
What are you doing? Scully heads back to the precinct, meets up with Mulder, tells him about Morris's death. And then this is where they have one of their first arguments of the show about believing that this person could be that this child could be seeing this man in the room. And as you mentioned, Scully is just like, no, look over here. Like, there's a much easier explanation. They walk over and there's like a trophy case with the picture.
This is a whole ass photo of the man
with
the
a picture
photo.
Of Charlie Morris just right there. She's like, she obviously saw the dude and just told us what he looked like. Like, I don't know why she did that, but like, that's way more
logical.
Probable than
and as she says, Mulder gets so distracted by the extreme possibilities that he doesn't see the obvious answer that's right in front of him.
But when he like presses her to find out how Morris died, she describes his body in the exact same way that Michelle
did,
well,
the
dolls.
There was evidence of an electric rat.
There was some electric rat. I don't know anything about Pikachu. I wish I could roll on these jokes. Like,
he's an electric rat and he shoots lightning.
And he's my friend, or he's not my friend.
He's very cute. Yeah. Well, sometimes he's not your friend. You know.
Why would he not be my friend? Like, what times is Pikachu
angry
at me?
Problem.
He's got an attitude. I will give Pikachu an attitude adjustment in a heartbeat.
He doesn't want to be kept in a Pokeball. He doesn't want to be in prison. So I guess he's really about freedom, you know, personal rights.
Who's keeping him in the ball? Is that Ash that's keeping him in the ball? Why?
Ash, well, he's trying to, but he can't.
Man, Ash, why are you
that's
fucking
why
up?
That's why you always see that motherfucker loose.
Yeah, I've never seen him in the ball.
Picture of Pokemon, you see that motherfucker's loose.
I've never seen him in the Pokeball. Not a single time.
No, he won't do it.
How big is Pikachu?
He's like a small dog or a cat. He's like a little. He sits on Ash's shoulder, and Ash is a 10-year-old boy. So
okay,
you know.
And he walks upright like a man, or he walks on all fours.
He can do both, but he's when he wants to go fast, he's on all fours.
I don't.
He walks upright like a man.
I don't like the fact that he walks upright like a man. We shouldn't allow base creatures like Pikachu to walk upright like a man. I'm sorry.
Stay on all fours.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta
get back in your cage, Pikachu.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want your head to the clouds, looking up and wondering about God. I want your nose to the dirt.
I don't want you dreaming about what more there could be for
no,
you.
No, no, no. Nose to the dirt. Fire your little electric darts when I tell you to, and get back in the ball, Pikachu.
Yeah.
And
this is the conversation that Mulder and Scully are having.
Yes, absolutely.
They've gone off track a little.
So they figure out like this is how Morris died. And then we switch over to they're gonna go at this point. They decide to go visit Morris's old partner.
They want to find out more information about his death.
They go visit this dude Fior, Tony Fior. He seems really paranoid. He doesn't want to let them in. So he walks out onto the porch and kind of cagily talks about the way Morris died. He attributes it to retaliation from the Triad, because the police department was like cleaning up the streets, and then the Triad just chose a cop to get revenge on and killed this dude.
Likely story buster.
And notably, he had told Scully and Mulder that his wife was sleeping. He didn't want to wake her up. And when she comes out to like see what's up, Scully spots that she has like baking powder on her hands. So she's been cooking. She hasn't been sleeping. So why go through the lie? And as soon as she comes out, he shuts everything down and like rushes her inside.
Hey,
and is like,
it's the weekend. Let me get back.
Yeah,
inside.
Yeah. It's Saturday. Hey. What the fuck are you doing working? Get me back in here. And then we see right after this, Fior go to all of these dudes kind of look alike. So
this dude's, I think his name is Leon. And we learned that post mortem, I learned his name was Leon.
Yeah, this is Leon Felder. I thought this was. Because at the beginning of the episode, we see Baba Ghoul, or whatever his name is.
Yeah, that was it.
Baba Ghoul and his partner come in and to the precinct at first. So I thought this was Baba Ghoul's partner. Instead, it's like a random insurance salesman that we haven't met.
He's an insurance salesman.
Yeah, and I kind of... Again, this is like when I talk about like not being engaged with this episode very, very well. Like this is this kind of stuff. Like, oh, here's a random insurance guy that I'm kind of keep track of now. Like, I don't care about this. Yeah. None of this is exciting. Like, and he's
thankfully you don't have to keep track of him for very long. But
true,
it's clear that they inherited some great sum of money between them two and Baba Ghoul and Charlie Morris. The four of them were all part of something. Or maybe the three of them were all part of something, and Charlie Morris was killed because of that something.
Yes.
And Fiore, he'll hear, oh, Tony, let me call him Tony.
Tony.
Tony, he wants out. He doesn't want anything to do with this anymore. The FBI, they're sniffing around. He doesn't want anything to do with this. You know what I mean? But Leon is like, no, you can't back out of this. You know, we made a pact after 10 years. We're collecting on that.
What's a classic Pikachu line? What does Pikachu say? What's his tagline?
Probably like Pika P, something like that.
Can you give me that in a heavy New York accent?
Hey, Pika P. Hey, thank you. Pikachu.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Hey. I mean, there is the Detective Pikachu who does have a New York accent, as portrayed by Ryan Reynolds, I believe.
Is that what happens in that movie? Really?
Yeah, he could talk. He's almost like a human man.
I don't like that at all. I don't.
It's a lot, man.
Again, I don't like this. I don't think we should allow Pikachu to look up to the sky. I don't think that he deserves to see the blue. I don't think that he deserves to walk upright like a man. We're just setting him up for disappointment. It's just like that classic tweet of like, look at them. You gave monkeys anxiety. That's what we've doing to Pikachu. Like, we're just making him worse. He was happy in the field.
Like a monkey with anxiety.
Do what?
I feel like a monkey with anxiety.
100%, dude. I feel like I've been, yeah, absolutely, like a monkey with anxiety. After this conversation where they talk about like waiting for 10 years to get whatever's in the safety deposit back out, oh my God, I'm yawning in the middle of the sentence.
Yeah.
We watch insurance guy traveling around the city. He's walking down streets. He's avoiding some homeless people. They're really padding this episode out for insurance guy. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he jumps on a bus, goes somewhere. We don't know where. Gets off at this darkened corner. And we see his scarf kind of like telekinetically float back up as he's getting off the bus. And as the doors close, the scarf is trapped in it. So the bus pulls away. He's running alongside it, banging on the side. And of course, you're like, why doesn't the driver know?
This is so perplexing because actually the driver identifies it almost immediately.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop.
And well, the driver, like, we see like someone pushing the gas pedal down, like an invisible force pushing the gas pedal down. Like, this is,
I missed that. I was like, what is this doofus's problem?
Yeah. No,
there's a man.
It's not just that the bus driver is like, I'm on a schedule, fucker. I gotta get out of here. Yeah. Gotta get home. But no, instead, like, the
that makes way more sense.
Yeah, the bus is psionically manipulated to kill this dude.
Okay.
And eventually, like, the driver is able to stop, and as the camera pulls out and we see Leon's dead body, we also see that Michelle was on the bus. We jump back to the precinct where Michelle's mom is there, like, kind of crying her way through, like, how did my, you know, why does this keep happening to us? How did she get here?
You need to keep a better watch on this girl.
Yeah, what do you got going on that you can't, like, notice that your 8-year-old has walked out of the building? Like, what has happened
in
your
life? And, like, multiple times to kill multiple cops throughout this episode.
Yeah, and it happens twice, which is a weird, which is not a lot of times, but, you know, still two nickels.
Right.
So, as she's kind of crying her eyes out, Sharon comes over, pulls Mulder to the side, and we find out that insurance guy used to be partners with Baba Ghoul. And so then Mulder and Scully kind of take over a conference room and are trying to put the pieces together. They're trying to figure out why these four different cops are all connected, why they're dying. And then Scully notices a page missing from Morris's file. And we look at the logs, and it was last checked out by the insurance dude, which is really weird because I didn't know police files had like library systems of checkouts, and also didn't know that they would just allow former cops to come and check out a murder file. Like, it seems a little seems a little weird.
Seems strange, and it was also 24 hours ago, and it's like, okay, well, he obviously just immediately did something to this.
Mulder somehow manages to convince Mom to allow Michelle to go through regressive hypnosis, where she remembers being 24 years old in a dark room, kind of shouting out, you know, not wanting to do this. I don't want to do this. The therapist comes in. She's not a big Mulder fan at this point. It demands that they stop, kind of yells at the mom for allowing this to happen. And when Michelle starts saying, they're killing me, that's when the mom goes in and shuts the whole thing down.
Yeah.
And we get this really dumb argument between Mulder and Scully immediately afterwards, where Mulder is like, we got to do it again. And Scully rightfully is like, fucking how, man? Like, her therapist and her mom both said no. Like, what are you proposing to do? And then she makes the point that, and she does this not in every episode, but she makes this point a lot, where she says, like, even if you were able to do that, even if you got all of the information, even if you confirmed all of these things that you believe, you wouldn't be able to prosecute anybody. Like, we still wouldn't have a case. So what is the point of doing any of it? And that's kind of a bummer for Mulder. I think he realizes he lost that argument pretty badly.
Yeah. Do we skip the scene where they talked about the origami at Fiore's house with
that
his wife?
Has not happened yet.
Okay, I have that in my notes before the hypnosis.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Oh, no, absolutely. There's a whole paragraph in my notes that I just missed. I'm sorry.
So they go to her house. She hasn't seen her husband. He hasn't come home overnight. He said he was working, but she called, and no, he wasn't working. We find out that her ex-husband is, or dead husband, I don't know if they were divorced or he just died, but she was married to Charlie Morris, the dead cop, Tony's old partner. And this is where... Yeah, they see origami on the shelf there. Charlie was really big into that. Now Michelle is into origami. Mulder thinks it's reincarnation. That prompts them to go and do the hypnosis.
Yes, sorry.
Now we're up to speed.
Skip this whole section. There's okay. We should also note that, like, how fucking creepy it is to slide into your, like, partner's wife slash life.
Dude.
Still have your origami. Like, even if I'm married, like, if you died and I married Jess, right?
You'd want to. I feel like you'd want to get rid of my stuff.
I wouldn't have your anime fix around the house. I just wouldn't. I mean, I would tell her like you're allowed.
I could be haunting any one of them.
You're allowed to keep them. Like I'm not going to take them away from you. Like we're. But I don't want you to display them in the house for visitors to see. Like I feel like that's a little weird. And she would understand. I feel like Jess would be down.
I feel like regardless of you know, I don't have to be dead. You could be marrying me. You'd still want me to put them away for you. That's the biggest issue here. I just spit water everywhere. all right, back on track. I'm like soaked.
Oh God, do you need to take a break? Okay. Do you need to go dry off?
So no, I'm all right. I'm all right.
Are you too wet to podcast, Chris?
Dude, I'm soaked through.
So we go after.
Oh yeah, Mulder is analyzing
the videotape,
the tape recording of the hypnosis, and there is a strange part. Where things kind of glitch out for a second, and there's something going on in the static. There's an image in the static, and Mulder wants to have that analyzed.
Notably here, too, I think this is the first time we've gotten Mulder's notes. So he's, like, making notes about the case, like, narration from him as this is happening, talking about how there's no definitive proof of reincarnation and things like that, like, but it just definitely seems that way. He starts going frame by frame through the white noise. We switch over to Fiora's wife, to Tony's wife. She's still alone, and she's kind of shutting the house down. There's a knock at the door. When she goes out, all she finds is an origami giraffe, which was like the last piece of origami that Charlie Morris was supposed to make or something. Yeah. Yawn. Just fucking yawn. The biggest fucking yawn that I could possibly take.
Yeah, I don't even care about giraffes.
Yeah. If this was
an origami Pikachu, then we'd be talking.
I was just about to say the same thing. Oh my God. Origami Bulbasaur? Like, send me up.
Now we're cooking.
Does Bulbasaur walk on two legs like a man as well? Does he walk upright like a man?
Bulbasaur walks on four legs.
On four legs, good. Yeah, put his nose to the dirt. That's where all of these Pokemon
sounds like
belong.
He goes, Bulbasaur. That's what he sounds like, which is, that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I don't care what he sounds like. Yeah. So she picks this thing up and goes inside and is like, well, that's weird. Meanwhile, Mulder has taken this interview tape to an FBI expert who's going to use giant knobs and buttons to try to manipulate it.
I love a guy with giant knobs. You know what I mean? God. Like, he's putting in the work.
Love this dude, especially because later he explains what he does, and like Mulder is very, very bored by it, and I'm just like here for it. I'm into it.
I just want to say there's so much water on my mic from what I
said. Are you serious? How much water did you have in your mouth?
I had like a full mouthful of water that I laughed and it just.
How much water do you drink at one time? Like, what is a mouthful? Like, is that 17 ounces? Like, what are you doing over there?
Huge gulp. I don't think any of it made it down my throat.
God damn. Are you big gulping over there?
I'm big gulping, dude.
Wild. Sharon shows up. She found the missing page through somebody in Florida or something. I don't care.
She went back and got some old records from like an old retired cop or something.
Turns out that this Morris dude, his cause of death wasn't, loss of limb or blackened eye. It was technically drowning in seawater, which is unusual. And we see then Tony rushing home, yelling for his wife, telling her to pack a bag. She's like confused and he starts yelling at her a whole lot when she doesn't immediately agree. And we see Michelle at the window kind of watching all of this. Meanwhile, the FBI guy is like, I assigned the two frequencies to the negative and the positive, and then I used an algorithm to merge them together, and here's the image. And it's this like weird, blurry image that Scully doesn't recognize, but Mulder immediately recognizes as the little submariner that was in the aquarium in Tony Fiore's home.
Yeah. Do you think that this actor was just kind of ad-libbing? He just wanted
100%.
To put a little flair on him.
Yeah.
And the director was like, yeah, whatever, that's fine.
Just keep it in. Yeah, whatever you got
to
do.
More life to the character.
Yeah. He was thinking that this was going to be a recurring role. Like, oh, they're going to need to do this every week. Like, I'm here.
They're
going
to need to analyze VHS tapes all the time.
Yeah. Me and Gillian Anderson are going to have children together, is what this guy was thinking.
Little does he know.
I am going to somehow convert her to my party, and it's going to be great. Yeah. And this guy never shows up again, probably.
Nope.
Meanwhile, back at Tony's house, they start hearing weird noises. He starts creeping through the house, and in a nod to Supernatural season 3, I think, an electrical cable comes loose and like wraps around his feet. This happened to Sam Winchester once, and I always, for some reason, I never...
That bozo.
That weird bozo. He falls over, loses the gun, and that's when Michelle shows up. I really wish we got... I think that what would have helped me out here is if Michelle was actually literally channeling Charlie Boris and like talking, if she had any lines whatsoever or expressed any personality whatsoever or any emotion, because throughout the rest of this, she just stares. Like, she's just standing there and
imagine
staring.
Imagine her just doing a gruff, like, old man New York.
Oh, God, I'd love it.
Incredible. It would have been awful. It would have been incredible.
But and maybe
that's the spice that this was missing.
And maybe they like wanted that to happen and like couldn't, right? Because the child actor sucks so bad that she couldn't figure it out.
Right.
But that's fine. That happens to somebody.
Dude, everything is covered. I just looked over at the TV next. It's covered in water. What the fuck?
How much water did you put in your mouth? That's insane.
I don't get it.
You were
a
crazy person.
It's had so much spread.
Chris, I have a glass of water and I have drank half of it during this podcast.
Maybe I spilled it out of the
water.
Bottle too without realizing.
What
it?
Did you do? Did you?
I don't know. The bottle's soaked too. Is it? Did I conjure more water?
Is there a water Pokemon? There's got to be a water Pokemon, right?
Oh, Squirtle, dude.
Squirtle. Does Squirtle walk like a man?
Yeah, he does. He walks on two legs.
Oh, I don't like that at all. Let me see.
Sometimes he wears sunglasses and he's in a gang. So, you know, he's trouble. He's trouble, that one.
Squirtles in a gang? What do they call him?
Yeah. The Squirtle Squad.
He's got four legs. He really walks around on...
He walks on two legs for the most part. I mean, sometimes he's on four, but I've only really ever seen him wearing sunglasses on two legs. That's what people come to this X-Files podcast for, you know?
It's me learning about... What is War Turtle?
Oh, he revolves into War Turtle. And then he evolves into Blastoise. Check that guy out. Blastoise, dude?
Let me see.
Dude, what would you think Mulder would do if he got his hands on one of those?
Oh, dude, he'd be freaking out. He'd be absolutely freaking out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of information about
Pokemon. There's
a strong
overlap between when X-Files was in its prime and when Pokemon was in its prime, you know? There's a good overlap.
I feel like Pokemon, for my memory, like, became popular like towards the late 90s. Was like 97, 98 was when that like kind of exploded, right? Like, that feels right to me. And I just was very confused by it. Like, I was like, I remember at the time, like, people like coming in and buying Pokemon cards from the video game store I worked at, and I was just like, I don't understand any of this. I didn't want to learn. Like, this was not a time for me to
learn. It's very, very funny. I was the same way. I was 7, but I was like,
yeah,
I don't know about this. But then everybody was into it, so there was no escaping it.
And you were just like, what about Cloud? What about Squall?
What about Cloud, you guys?
What about
Squall?
Does
anyone ever consider how he feels?
Michelle is just standing there. She begins to basically explode things inside the house, like glass frames and, you know, vases and the like. Mulder and Scully roll up. They are shut out of the house. Like, the door is, they can't open the door or the windows because of Michelle's telekinetic abilities. They eventually find
it. You can't open the front door, but you can bust in through the back door.
Well, she didn't think about the basement, right?
No, yeah, she didn't, you know, she didn't extend it that far.
Exactly. So they go through the basement, try to rush back up. As they come up, we didn't really mention this specifically, but like, Michelle had locked the wife in the room. And so Scully goes up to get the wife. Mulder comes over and like looks at Michelle, and Michelle is just standing there with fucking no emotion or no expression on her face whatsoever. She starts exploding some more stuff up. And eventually, when the wife comes downstairs, this is when the wife begs her husband in the form of this 8-year-old body, please don't hurt him anymore. Please don't hurt him anymore. And the coolest thing in this episode happens, which is like this cool blue light just illuminates everything. Yeah. And I thought like some weird ghost shit was about to happen. I thought we were about to see like a form of Charlie Boris like come out of this child's body or like electrical lights. But none of that happens. It just goes away because the aquarium explodes. And then the lights come back on, and that's pretty much it. That's what happens. That's all.
We're free. We're done.
Yeah, and I'm just sitting here like, what in the fuck? What are we? Yeah. I don't like this, Chris. Like, I don't think any of this is very good.
No, this is a very weak episode. There wasn't really anything very spooky. It was just Charlie sort of getting ghost revenge and putting a girl through a lot of trauma, and then his ex-wife or whatever says, "Oh, please don't hurt him," and then he stops. And that's it. That's the end of it. But they found the truth, you know, and Tony pleads guilty, and he's sentenced to jail or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle now is just seemingly returned to normal, and she is no longer haunted, just like my Discord name.
Yeah, we see her enjoying swimming lessons. So obviously, as when she was possessed by Charlie Morris, she was afraid of water because that's how he died. Now she's free to enjoy the water. I was telling you about Adrian Linker in the outtakes. She has a line in a song that's like, the whole world is ending, isn't it a good time to go swimming before all of the water disappears? And I'm just like, man, this is depressing and sad. Put it on repeat, please.
Damn, I gotta open a pool.
I need to go find a pool.
I need a pool guy real quick.
Autumn literally like heard 2 seconds of that album and was like, should you be listening to this? This doesn't seem
good.
Are
you really in the space for this right now, man?
I do like, we get Mulder's narration to talk about like what happens, like the...
I like his narration. I mean, he's not really saying anything all that interesting, but I just like that he's doing it.
And he ends it with like X-File, case number, whatever, status unexplained. Which is very good.
I'm surprised they don't end every episode like that.
And that's the end of this episode. Yeah.
And then he closes his folder at the end, and we see a little doodle of Pikachu on the front.
Exactly. Yeah, just a little tiny...
That's what the truth is out there again.
A little tiny Pika on there. What did you say, Pika P? Is that his...
Pika, kind of like that, yeah.
Jesus Christ!
But just picture if like I was like an energetic Japanese woman doing it. That's what he would sound like.
Are you not an energetic Japanese woman?
In my heart, I am.
We've never met in person, so I don't really know what
I could be. Anything, dude.
I
have a mustache right now, which is definitely troubling.
Jensen is going to be in Boston in April of next year.
It's not on my watch.
If you want to,
not if I can help it.
Do you want to do a we could plan out our photo op, which would be pretty fun. I think.
Oh, you think we should wait in line for 6 hours to?
Absolutely. I feel like that's with the limited amount of years that I have left in my life. That's exactly what I should be doing. Waiting in line for 6 to 8 hours.
Your choice, man. I'll be there
to see Jensen and make him sign something. I don't know what I would do. I don't know
what they do on those. Hold a sign or something?
Yeah, if you're wondering why we're talking about Jensen Ackles and not X-Files, it's because this episode was so boring. I didn't really particularly like it outside of just a couple of highlights. And I don't know. It was neat seeing some origami. I hadn't seen a bunch of like origami animals in a long time. It kind of made me want to pick up a piece of paper and fold it. But
so we've got to brainstorm. What's our title?
To this episode,
do you want to put Pikachu in the title? Are we gonna push listeners away even further than we already have? I just feel like we should warn them as they come into the episode. This one's fucked,
dude. After liver edging, like I don't know that.
Oh, true. True. Well, this is sort of a different. This is a different rabbit hole.
People
you know?
Are
that was just
yeah. People
gross.
People just expect us to do stuff now. I mean, we've got huge Titty Merlin fan art from our last outtakes.
That's right.
So like we are far beyond the pale. Like
we've definitely turned the page on some. Darkness.
I put that Pillow Princess Scully on Tumblr, and it's amazing because people love the drawing, but they feel compelled to tell me like, but I mean, she wouldn't be a Pillow Princess, and I'm like, okay, like it's that. That wasn't the joke, that she wasn't something. The joke was that she was. So, congratulations on just like seeing something and being weird about it. I guess I don't know what to tell you. Fucking weirdos.
I'm gonna comment under all this fan fiction. Scully wouldn't do that. Cass wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Thank you everybody for listening. We very much appreciate it. Thank you to all of the people leaving ratings and reviews on Apple Podcast and Spotify. We see those. We love you. Thank you so much. Thank you to our patrons over at patreon.com/monsterofthe week. We are coming up very close to our feedback episode, which means you can write into us. You can email us at monsterofthe week podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at MOTWcast. You can, I don't know. Call Chris. Chris, what's your personal telephone number? Can you go ahead and just read that off for me real quick?
214.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. You can iMessage me at something. I don't know. You can send your stuff in. We will talk about it. We have a fun guest lined up that I'm pretty excited about. So that should be fun. Chris, what do we, do you have any final thoughts, last things to say?
Shout out to the Squirtle Squad.
Shout out to Squirtle Squad. Remember, everybody, to please stay spooky. A little robot-y.
How do I sound now?
Whoa. Shiver me timbers.
Just pressed my face into the microphone.
My timbers be shivered.
Oh, dude. Didn't I text you that the other day? You explained something happened to you. I said, I'd be shivering me timbers. And I remember saying it because it made myself laugh.
I think you said you were... I think you did that about the guy that was just in your... yard, right? Like you said.
Oh, yeah, there was some man in my yard. Never figured out what that was about, but
yeah, people just wander around the neighborhoods nowadays with clipboards looking legit.
Great.
I was just listening to my new obsession, which I told you about a while ago, but I've maintained my obsession, which is the XG. Which is a K-pop, an all women's K-pop group.
That's right.
With one lady that can rap real good, one lady that can sing real good, and the other one seemed to have talents too. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, the others have. Maybe they're funny, you know.
Yeah. Maybe they're the ones doing the choreography. I don't know.
Like, they've got a great personality.
There's one that just seems to like go like, yeah.
Oh yeah, that'd be me if I was in a K-pop or whatever group.
Bling bling.
you gotta have it made if that's your job. Like, you don't have to be the Lady Gaga of the group. I don't know why she's the one I just went to. You get to just to sit in the back and just go, yeah.
Yeah, blink,
baby
blink.
Baby girl. That's nice. That's the setup right there.
It's good shit. It's absolutely good shit. I don't like all of their music. It seems like at some point, if I had to guess, just going by like the music videos that they released, that they hired a different like publicist or something, because they went from like very, very cutesy K-pop girly stuff to basically making Megan Thee Stallion videos. Like, it's exactly that. So, yeah. So,
for a while, I really didn't like K-pop because, and I guess this is probably more like the boy groups, because it all sounded like late 90s boy bands to me.
A lot of it sounds like that to me as well, so that's
the reason. It sounded just like Backstreet Boys or NSYNC, but then they would try to do like cool rap stuff, and I just thought it all sounded so bad. What was the big one? Oh, BTS.
Never.
I just was like, I don't get this.
Yeah, I never got BTS.
And obviously, they were like one of the biggest groups in the world, so it's you know, clearly I'm the one who doesn't get it, but that always, like, yeah, I just really, really didn't like their sound. But lately I'll hear something and it'll grow on me a little bit. I think I like the more like just like kind of poppy stuff. Just the very straightforward, this is just some fun pop music stuff.
I've been listening to what I feel like are polar opposites of music. One is Chappelle Roan, who has gotten fairly popular on the TikTok, and as well as like going on tour with Olivia Rodrigo. But she's like she performs in drag, I think. There's just huge wigs, makeup, like the whole the outfits and everything. And she seems to just sing lesbian pop music. That's the only way that I can really describe it as lesbian pop music. And then on the other end of the spectrum is Adrienne Linker. Do you know this woman?
No.
She's the lead singer of a band called Big Thief, which I had never also...
I know Big Thief.
So she's the lead singer of that band. I had heard of that band, but I've never listened to their music. Adrienne Linker released a solo album this year, just recently. And it makes me cry a whole lot. It's very sad. It's a lot of emotional labor that lady seems to be doing
in
those songs.
Is this Bright Future?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, yeah. I think that's right. That should be right. First track is like, I'm so bad at because I never look at anything anymore.
Oh no, I don't know the names of. I used to know like every lyric to every album that I liked, and now I'm like, wait, what band is this?
Yeah,
I've listened to this song 45 times. I can't remember what this band's called.
Or like the name of tracks. Like I never really look at Spotify anymore. So like any kind of like naming of tracks, I'm just kind of generally out. So it's difficult. It's hard out here to be an aging pop music fan, I guess.
I know. My what's it called? iTunes thing. They don't have as good of like charts and like tracking and stuff as Spotify. But my most played album of the year so far is, I don't know, it's by Sisters of Mercy, I can tell you that much. But I don't know what it's called, and I don't know any of the song names, even though I've listened to it like 40 times. What the fuck is the name of this album? Because this is exactly what we're talking about.
On Spotify, if
you... Vision Thing. The name of the album is Vision Thing. I didn't know that. I've listened to this a lot.
On Spotify, if you search for On Repeat, you'll get a list of songs that you've been listening to a lot lately. Mm-hmm. So number one is Real House by Adrian Linker, which is the first track off that Bright Future album. The second one is the Na Na song from Katamari.
Oh, hell yeah.
And so it's just a mixture of Katamari and Adrian Linker and
just slipping that in for you.
yeah, just a lot of sad music mixed with good music, I guess. Or not sad music. I don't know how you would describe.
I've been, oddly enough, listening to Modest Mouse. I used to really like them, and I forgot they existed for years. They're doing like a 20th anniversary re-release of Good News for People Who Love Bad News. And that's the one that had Float On, you know, their big song.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was listening to that, and I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I've, like, seen this band live. I used to love them. I just completely forgot about them.
Isn't it weird when that happens? I had that experience the other day with... It was a rapper that I'd listened to a lot back in the day, and then like they released something new, and I was like, oh yeah, this dude existed.
Yeah, hold up, wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah. Oh no, it wasn't a rapper. It was a producer, a guy named Controller 7. Apparently, like he produced a bunch of stuff in like the early aughts for the label Anacon, which is something that I was really really into. I still am. And then like disappeared for 20 years, apparently went to school, got married, had kids. And then like only recently, 20 years later, has he started producing again and has produced some amazing tracks. Like he's like all the way back in and doing an album with two of my favorite rappers, which is going to come out this year that I'm extremely excited about.
That rules. I mean, you could be forgiven for like forgetting about a producer, though, because they're not always front and center.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe not
it's
in the hip hop world.
I forget all the bands that I used to be obsessed with. And, which I mean, I can't even think of anything right now to give you an example because I just forget everything. I'm so like inattentive with my music. I'll end up listening to like whatever I downloaded most recently, just over and over. And then I'm like, I don't even like this. Why do I keep putting it on?
Because
it's just the top thing on my. And maybe this is because Apple Music isn't doing enough of a good job filter or giving me new music. The other problem is I listen to so many soundtracks while I read or whatever. So. A lot of times it just is recommending me more of that. And I'm like, no, I want to listen to like some jams, not the Final Fantasy soundtrack right now.
Spotify made it so that you can specify playlists that and albums that don't... that you can basically tell it, like, don't count this in my recommended.
Don't count this.
Don't count this kind of thing. So I think that could be pretty helpful sometimes. I just did it for the weird Russian goth disco playlist that Autumn and I listen to when we make dinner. Because it was, like, at the end of every year, it was like, oh, Molkat Dama is your number one listen to. And I'm like, I don't think that's not me. That's us.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a whole vibe. You got Cold Cave on there, right? They just put out a new song.
Yeah, Cold Cave is on there. And also, like, it would pop stuff like that up. Like, Cold Cave has a new album up, and I'm like, I'm okay. I just want to listen to my weird hip-hop stuff. Let me alone.
Man,
I've had the bad brain so much lately, I can barely play video games.
I hate that.
Still pushing into Dragon's Dogma 2, but...
How's that going?
It's good. Like, I like it. It's weird because like, and I'm not very far into it. Like I'm playing for like an hour or two max, and then like just like can't keep my focus engaged. But I've only encountered like maybe, as far as like normal enemies, like only like four different types, maybe. Like just some goblin guys and some lizard dudes and some like harpy guys. And that may be actually it. There may only be three. Which just seems a little like. I think maybe if I go to a different continent later or something, there'll be like different guys over there. But it just seems like as I was, because they gave me a quest, which is in three parts and like three remote places on the map that you had to travel to. And it, as you know, from Dragon's Dogma doesn't have like traditional fast travel stuff. Like you can, you can catch a wagon to a town and get a little closer to where you got to go. But like for the most part, you were on foot. Or if you're a wizard like me, you're levitating your way through the world, which is a lot of fun.
That's how I traversed Morrowind back in the day. Levitate over everything.
Yeah, just hit the double X and all of a sudden you're just floating. Float on, brother. But I was traveling across the continent, like doing these quests for the story and like realizing like, oh, I've fought these same dudes in these like caves or in the overworld or whatever. I finally found a new one. There was a slime today, which I thought was unusual. And the big guys are super fun. But also as a wizard, I find myself just like standing away from the big monsters. And
you don't really
need
to climb them as a wizard, right?
Yeah. So the game like lets you change what they call vocations pretty easily. So like, and you level up a vocation as you play it more. So like I could easily just switch to a warrior or something and do different stuff, right? Like that'd be a pretty easy thing to do. So I might do that because as of now, like I thought wizard would be fun and levitating is fun, but also I feel like I'm not like engaging in the combat. So, but also
maybe
like
have a better time. And
like I mentioned, I'm also not engaged with like fucking anything right now because of the bad brain.
So. Bad brain will do that to you. I haven't really had necessarily a bad brain. I've just been like tired lately and kind of just in a little funk. No big deal. But I started playing Dark Souls 2 after we talked about Dragon's Dogma, because I think it's, you know, two fantasy series that start with a D and have a 2 in them. So I started playing Dark Souls 2 again. And I've been having a great time. I think Dark Souls 2, the bosses are all very easy. I don't remember any that I've ever like been super stuck on. I mean, I'll probably eat my words in a minute when I get to something new. But I've just been like breezing through it. I know that the world can be a little bit unforgiving sometimes, but what's really been funny about it is I don't currently have PS Plus. I guess it just keeps expiring on me, so whatever. So when I go to talk to any of like the PvP covenants, they're just like fuck off. They don't even bring it.
That's fun.
They like
that's
won't
hilarious.
Engage with me. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I've never seen any of this dialogue.
What happens
like,
when
you're not going to have any fun here? Leave.
What happens when you go to like the monument in Majula that tells you how many deaths there have been? Like, do you get...
I think it just tells me my deaths.
Oh, that's awesome. That's actually really, really cool. Like, I kind of dig that. Yeah, so you don't have to keep track of it yourself.
I'll have to double check, but I'm pretty sure I checked it a couple days ago, and it said, like, 36 or something like that. And I was like, oh, interesting. I was telling you forever ago how I wanted to empty out the world, which I did not do, but I did it for the first area, Forest of Fallen Giants.
Yeah.
And then, what's it, Heed's Tower of Flame?
Tower.
Whatever, that second area. The funniest thing about all of this is that I will finish an area, and I think this is definitely a Dark Souls 2 problem, and then I go, all right, where the fuck do I go next? I'm just like, wait, where am I supposed to go?
There's so many, like, weird dead ends. Like, there's so many, like, you finish, like, the forest, and you're just like, oh, I guess I'll go back to Majula.
This doesn't go anywhere else.
Yeah, and Hyde's Tower, like, you could easily, like, just miss the little ladder with the boss guy on the other side, right? Like, you could just easily miss that. Like, it's pretty easy. The bosses in Dark Souls 2, I think, are almost 100% pretty easy until you start getting into the DLC stuff. And then the DLC is like, fuck you. We're going to.
Yeah.
But even then, in the DLC, I feel like the levels are harder than the bosses, like especially in the DLC. So,
yeah.
God, there's
That's
fucking
I think, you
reindeer.
Know,
Jesus.
There's always somebody in Dark Souls 1. Whether it's your first playthrough, obviously Ornstein and Samoa, you'll get stuck on. That's you know, a rite of passage. But every time, you know, when I replay it now, I still have to fight him 3 or 4 times before I clear it. And there's always just a boss or two like that that I'm like, I'll stick. But just with Dark Souls 2, there's nobody. And I've been thinking, should I replay 3 after this? And I think I do that every time I replay 2. I think maybe I'll do 3 again because I've barely touched it since, you know,
since
the first
came out.
Couple months that it came out. Yeah.
Our friend friend Patrick from, you know, Patty Doesn't One Bro on YouTube is doing Dark Souls 3 as Soul Level 1 right now. And he was and normally when he does this, like, we started a semi-tradition in Dark Souls 1 when he did this of what we call... oh shit, it's not the worst week. It's like jerk week or something. Dick week. It's dick week.
Dick week.
So and I play the role of the titular dick. I was like invading him and like just generally like he was streaming one time for which he rarely, really does, and I was like, oh, this is my opportunity. Like I'm gonna find my PS3 copy
Go and
yeah. Um And we kept, and so with, like, it became a tradition where we would spend like 4 or 5 recording sessions doing like duels or races or like dumb things or whatever it was. And we did a bunch of stuff in Elden Ring. We did a bunch of stuff in Dark Souls 2. But then he told me Dark Souls 3, and I was like, okay, I've actually never done a soul level 1 run in Dark Souls 3. So let me boot this game up. And I got like to Majula, or to the Firelink Shrine, I guess, and then was like, okay, I'm done. Like, I just don't want to play this game. I feel bad. Pat's going to listen to this in like 5 years and be like, oh, that's why he didn't do anything. And it's and mostly...
Dude, I don't know why I don't really like Dark Souls 3 that much. It's weird.
At the time, I kind of thought, when I came out of it, I thought it was because I was doing a gaming podcast at the time, and I was doing Don't Give Up Skeleton. So I thought like, oh, I ruined this game for myself because I was consuming it so fast. Like I made myself play it so quickly that it just became like not fun. It became a job instead of a hobby. But then when I booted it back up again, of course, like getting to Firelink is not very difficult, but like, there's just something about it that I don't particularly like, where I'm just like, no, this is not for me. This is not my thing. So,
and it's weird, 'cause it was the fastest I think I've ever beaten one of these games on a first shot. You know, you and I both beat it within a couple of days of it coming out.
Yeah.
And I don't know if maybe that was it. If I rushed through it and then kind of like had a bad time with it. I kept trying to look for links to Dark Souls 1 and 2, just like, oh, let me find like the hidden lore, or just like, can I come up with my own theories and stuff? And every time I would go to a certain area, I'd be like, oh, this looks like this, and then kind of just realizing like, oh, this is all in my head. I don't know if these connections are really there or not, or even if they are there, I don't know if I care. It was so strange, because it seems to be of that trilogy to be the most popular. All my friends in real life like it the most out of the three.
Yeah. I think for like pure gameplay mechanics, out of the three games, like, it's probably the best, right? Because it's them refining that formula down. But like, for atmosphere and for like characterization and characters and like just world building and things like that, like, I feel like the first one will always be my ride or die.
Yeah, definitely.
Like it's just so too much. It's so much that that game like changed me in a very fundamental way, which is a weird literally fucking thing to say, but it's true. Yeah. So,
and I do like, I mean, I know it feels like 2 is the one everyone hates, but I think 2 is really unique and really interesting.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's as good as 1.
No.
Even though I do really love it, and I sometimes feel like it's my favorite because I think I've played it the most at this point. For some reason, maybe it was just because Dark Souls wasn't on PS4 for a while, and I just didn't ever feel like pulling out the PS3, so I would just replay 2 all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I can see that. The remaster isn't bad. The remaster isn't too terrible.
I still haven't finished it.
I haven't either.
I need to do that at some point.
Yeah, I haven't. I never. I just made a gimmick PvP character and was like, I'm just going to do my normal, like, weird invasion stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah. There's always, like, and because of that, like, how many games I've started, I'm like, let me try this build or that build. I mean, most of the time, I just do fucking sword and board.
Of course.
I'm super bored. I just like that. I was thinking about that. I was like, what's my favorite, like, fantasy aesthetic?
Sword and board.
And it's not, like, it's not big sword. I just like the fucking sword and shield. I just think that, I just like the way it looks. It's a classic, you know?
Did you see that they cast characters for that Duncan and Egg Game of Thrones series? Like, the weird...
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, they cast the titular Duncan and Egg. Which just look like generic guys to me. Yeah. I mean, the egg is obviously like a younger dude. Like, he's like, right, looks like he's 10 or something, but
he's an egg. Oh wow, that's a small boy.
That's a very it's a very, very young person.
But I bet they're both British as hell, and that's
100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But it's just interesting that they're still like insisting on making more Game of Thrones stuff. I watched the first couple of episodes of those two dudes, I can never remember their names. Benendorf, who's the Game of Thrones guys?
Benendorf, sure, yeah. Benioff. D&D, I think, is what everybody called them, actually.
D&D is, yeah, probably a lot easier to remember. They did that Netflix series that Netflix went so hard on, the Three Body Problem. And
was that good?
We watched the first two episodes. It's really interesting. And it's based on like a really, really popular sci-fi book. And also, Autumn does what she always does, which is pick up the book. In the show, they introduce you to these like kind of weird stylized like VR helmets, and they're just like no branding, just like a smooth piece of silver that goes over your head, like no bulky like wires. It just like you just plop it on. And she said in the book, it's really funny because like it's a sci-fi book, but it's trying to be like realistic. So it's got like in the book, the VR headsets are just like a whole body suit that has like pressure things and temperature changes to like give you the feeling of realism. And in the show, they were just like, no, it's just a helmet. Fuck all that.
Yeah. I'm always fascinated by it, even though I've never done any VR stuff in real life, but just like the sci-fi concept of it. And it was, you know, I was so obsessed with .hack as a kid playing those games. And those games have like an email component to them where you're sending emails to your friends and it gives you like a desktop before you actually like log into the game. So nice. It feels like you're playing an MMO.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's like I would always just think of like, but is he like, I'm running around as an anime character. Is that what the guy wearing the headset is supposed to be seeing, or is it first person? Like that disconnect always fucking drove
gets
me nuts.
Gets your mind weird. Yeah. You never did a PlayStation VR or Oculus thing? You never done any of that?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
It's my experience with it is that it's not very good, to be honest.
Yeah.
I got the PSVR for Christmas, and tried my best to enjoy it as much as possible, but like it was such a pain in the ass to set up. There's all of these wires, and there's like, now I gotta sit in this room and like I can't see anything else, and I'm hopefully like the camera is in the right position, and then I'm not stumbling into things. The most value I got out of it was just scaring friends and family that would come over. So I think
that's the true value of VR, is just to fuck with people.
Yeah. Anytime someone would come over, I'd put them in the kitchen demo and tell them it was going to be like a aquarium thing, and then like, you know, a weird zombie lady would crawl into their lap, and that's how I got my dad literally ripped the thing off of his head and was like, absolutely not, like, get this away from me. And I was like, yes, this rules. Anyway, yeah, none of the VR stuff really worked for me. Even the From Software stuff, Derisine, didn't do it for me. So
it's because I don't know. It's just, unless it's perfect, I just feel like it's never going to be good enough.
And that's I think that's the thing, is like, and it always feels a little clunky in your hands. And I think I've told you about this. The one time that I tried an Oculus at Best Buy, did I tell you about this?
Maybe.
I was Autumn and I had gone to lunch, and I had to stop by Best Buy to pick up something, and we had kind of a boozy lunch. So I wasn't like drunk, but I wasn't like 100% sober. Yeah, I was feeling pretty good. And this dude, and I was like, oh, they've got an Oculus demo. Like, let me check this out. And this dude drops me into, he doesn't ease me into this at all. It's like, I go from zero to like, I'm walking over a skyscraper or like a giant cave, like
it was Jesus.
Some height thing, right? Like where you're looking down and there's just like thousands of feet below you. And so like, I do the exact same thing my dad did when he saw the zombie, which is just rip the thing off my head and just like shove it at him. I was like, I don't need this. Bye. I gotta go.
No.
I'm out of here. See you
immediately
later.
Too real. No, thank you.
You want to do X-Files?
Let's cook.